Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
This is Sam Grass in Atlanta, Georgia, and joining me in the studios today is Lee Cantor. Lee, what do you think about the glorious fall autumn we're having in Atlanta now?
The fall autumn?
Is that what you call it? The fall weather. See,
that's what you call it?
That's what I love this show because it's so laid back.
That's what I just start right away.
I have not called Helen Rory yet, but I'm sure I will before it's all over.
But he forgot my name earlier, so that was perfect.
What a great way to begin the show. Start busting on Sam right off the bat. Okay.
I'm enjoying the fall autumn weather.
Thanks, Lee. I'm going to turn this right over to you, Brad. How are you today? Brad in Texas is joining us.
I'm doing well. This is Brad Culp. Good morning. It's September 29th, and we have the same glorious weather that you have there. So I was just telling these guys I live for these days. It's absolutely beautiful. You're going to love my trivia this morning, Sam. So on this day, in 1789, the first U.S. Congress adjourned.
Really?
And they've been doing nothing ever since.
Well, now, the latter part I agree with.
I think the adjourning is the best part of government.
Exactly. 1951, the first live sporting event was seen coast-to-coast on network television. What do you think? Which event do you guys think that was?
Wonderful World of Disney.
It's a sporting event.
It was actually a college football game between Duke and Pitt.
I think what I was referring to, that was the first a broadcast show in color, if I remember correctly. There's my age.
Sam answers his own questions.
Very good. And, you know, we have to have something that segues into the senior services theme of the show. Jerry Lee Lewis is 75 years old today. So happy birthday, Jerry Lee.
That's it? I thought he was older than that.
75.
He's almost your age, Lee.
My age?
Yeah.
I wouldn't. You don't want to be talking about age.
Yeah, really. You are the senior statesman, Mr. Grass.
And I handle it so well. We got to get on with the show.
I'm trying. You keep interrupting me. We got a great show this morning. We've got Helen Frederick from Plymouth Harbor. She's the director of that program in Atlanta. And we're going to start today with John McNair. John is an elder law attorney here in the Dallas area. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Glad you could be here with us.
Thank you. Thanks, Brad.
Well, let's start, as we usually do, with having you just give us a little bit of background on yourself, where you grew up, where you went to school, you know, ultimately how you got into the senior care industry.
I grew up in a small town in Arkansas, Jonesboro, Arkansas. There is a college there, Arkansas State, and I got my undergraduate degree there. I went to law school at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. And then came to Texas, to Dallas, to go through a Master's of Tax Law program at SMU. After that, I began work at a small firm in Fort Worth doing estate planning and probate. And I have been through several small firms, but I've been with the firm I'm at now, Barnett McNair Hall, since the early 90s, and have always done estate planning and probate. And probably 10 to 15 years ago, some financial advisors came to me and asked me to assist with elder law issues, and I worked with those referral sources for a number of years, and in the last 2 years have decided to really make that an emphasis of my practice and have started really doing a lot of elder law practice, more so in the last few years than earlier than that.
Okay. So was there something that kind of drew you to work with seniors and the elder law? I heard you say that you were asked by some financial planners, but, you know, usually it's a little bit more than that, and there's usually some kind of story there.
Right. There's two aspects to it for me. There is a tremendous satisfaction in helping somebody find the funds necessary to help them through long-term care, and that's primarily the emphasis of what we do, is helping them find money to help pay for long-term care. And the other part is it's really a fascinating area of law. There's lots of twists and turns and unusual laws. It's not so different from tax laws that I'm used to, so I find it an intellectual challenge, and that's interesting.
Okay. So in terms of helping to find the funds, tell us a little bit about how you do that.
Right. So there's basically two programs that I help clients with. One is Medicaid, which is a federal program which is administered by each state. And there are funds through the Medicaid program to help individuals pay for a long-term care nursing home. And oftentimes we can help them preserve assets where otherwise they would just decimate their estate because of the spend down on their own health care. And in addition, for veterans, there are VA benefit programs that help pay for assisted living or in-home care.
Okay. Let me ask you about Medicaid a bit, because I think that there's a general notion that Medicaid is only available for someone who's pretty much destitute. Can you respond to that?
Right. There are a couple things to say about that. Number one, there are rules in the Medicaid program to make sure that if there's one spouse at home and one spouse in the nursing home, that the spouse at home doesn't become poverty-stricken and destitute in order to help pay for the care of the individual who's in the nursing home. So we can actually preserve a fairly substantial estate for the person who is still in the community, and that's one of the areas. Also, even for single individuals with proper planning, oftentimes we can preserve roughly half of their assets, and people do want to preserve their assets to ultimately pass to their family members.
So give me an example of how that's done and how you preserve that estate.
So, for example, with a married couple with one at home, a case I'm working on right now, the assets of the community spouse can be preserved basically in this formula, one half of their countable resources, and I'm not going to get down into the weeds about that, but half of their countable resources up to a maximum of $109,000, roughly speaking. And if they have more than that, that excess would keep the institutionalized spouse from qualifying. However, the community spouse can purchase something called an irrevocable immediate annuity, and if done properly, those assets no longer are treated as assets, but are simply treated as income for the community spouse. So that's one of the tools in our toolbox.
So let me ask you about that. I know just enough to be dangerous about Medicare, but there's what everybody talks about is the five-year look-back period. So is this irrevocable immediate annuity subject to that five-year look-back?
There are no penalties for transfers to a community spouse. So in this case, we would get the assets into the hands of the community spouse, retitle assets into their name, and those penalties associated with gifts don't apply in this situation with a community spouse. So the five-year rule is kind of irrelevant when we have a spouse at home.
Gotcha. Okay. So let me flip the situation then to the single person. And, you know, I heard you say that you can help protect maybe up to half the assets. How is that done?
There's a popular technique called reverse half-a-loaf, where you make gifts to a family member of assets. And as you say, there is a penalty associated with gifts if you're giving to someone other than a spouse, and those gifts create a certain penalty period. And again, I'm not going to get down in the weeds on that, but as the person who receives the gifts gives money back to the institutionalized person, they are reducing that penalty period because gifts given back reduce the penalty. So you make a gift of, say, $80,000, and you're giving money back to that institutionalized person to pay for the nursing home care while they're waiting out the penalty period. The penalty period is actually being reduced as that money is being given back, and ultimately we might be able to save $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 of that, depending on the circumstances.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So talk then a little bit about the VA programs. You know, we've had some conversations before on that, but give us your perspective on that, and then, you know, talk about the benefits of that program as opposed to maybe some of the similar drawbacks to the Medicaid program.
Right. The VA benefits are going to be useful in a different setting because they are typically used for somebody who has started receiving in-home care or assisted living, because there are certain types of benefits from the VA. They call them pension. There's basic pension. There is something that in the industry it's called aid and attendance benefits, and there are also housebound benefits. But they all revolve around the concept that if you have to pay for care, and that care is to assist you with two of the five activities of daily living, like cooking, medication, bathing yourself, clothing yourself, those kind of things, then if that expense exceeds your recurring income, and you have a low enough asset base, you will qualify for those benefits. And so we help them figure out, you know, what are they spending money on, what are their recurring income sources, and how do we handle the assets.
So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here, so forgive me in advance for doing this, but my understanding, particularly with the aid and attendance program, is that you cannot charge a client directly for the application process for aid and attendance. So the question, you know, to be quite blunt about it, is why do you do that, and why should somebody come to you for help as opposed to either trying to find somebody to help them with it, somebody else that's not an attorney, or do it themselves?
Right. So there's three phases of this type of engagement regarding VA benefits. There's planning, which usually involves planning both for VA benefits and for Medicaid, because we are talking about reducing assets, which may involve gifting, which will have an impact on Medicaid planning. So planning, legal planning, is something that I can charge for and do. There's the application process, which I cannot charge for and would not charge for. And if there is an appeal, there is the possibility of charging for that. I have made a determination I'm not going to be involved in any appeals process. I would send that to somebody else.
And I'm not familiar with that part of it, so tell me a little bit about the...
Well, it's possible that after our application it will be denied, and sometimes they're denied for valid reasons, and sometimes the caseworker for the Veterans Administration didn't understand the facts, and as you explain things to them, provide more information, you can get it approved after an initial denial.
So that's an interesting bit of information, because I think over the past year we've had two or three people that have talked about the aid and attendance program, and that's the first time I've ever heard that you actually can make an appeal. I think that's an important point for our listeners, that if they have been denied, you know, there may be a way for them to appeal that decision.
Right, and sometimes it is a valid denial because perhaps they haven't really talked to a professional before they started doing some things, and they ended up doing things that were really counterproductive. One thing to know about the process is if you're denied, it's for a one-year period of time. So after 1 year from that denial, if it was for a proper reason, start over and do the planning right, and after a year, reapply.
So it sounds like, and you know, we've always kind of, I think everybody has heard this, don't go it alone, don't go it alone, but I think most people don't really understand why they shouldn't go it alone. What is it that you or someone else like you brings to the table to help them navigate this application process?
Well, as you can see from our discussion, there are gifts that create penalties, there are gifts that don't create penalties. There are times when there's a spouse when we don't care about penalties. There's a differentiation between trying to get funds for assisted living versus nursing home care. And if you don't know all of these rules and haven't studied them, it's quite possible you will do things that are counterproductive. So I think it's useful to have a professional in that process.
Right. You said earlier that part of what you liked about elder law was the twists and turns and the intellectual challenge. Can you give us an example of something like that, or tell us a story about where you've been able to help a family?
Sure. I can give you a really excellent example of a lady that I am working with right now. Her father has already qualified for VA benefits. But those benefits, plus his own recurring income, is not going to be sufficient to cover his assisted living. It was okay for his in-home care, but now his level of care is going up, and he doesn't have the money even with the VA benefits. So they're going to need to sell his house. But if he sells his house individually, he will receive funds that will make him disqualified for at least a year. So we don't want to break that continuation of funds. So you can make a gift of a house, and you can make it without penalty for VA purposes. We give that house into a special type of trust that is for the benefit of his daughter. That special type of trust is written so that for income tax purposes, all income is still taxable to that veteran. And when the house is sold, that house and the sale will still be subject to the tax break that one gets for selling their own residence. After the house is sold, the cash that would have been a problem in his hands is now in that trust and will be distributed to a different trust for his daughter that she can use for her benefit, and if she needs to, she can take money out and do whatever she wants, perhaps even helping him as is needed.
Wow. That's really interesting because I had a conversation with one of my clients not too long ago, same sort of thing, not in an assisted living environment, but in the home care environment where the daughter's comment, the reason she didn't want to pursue the aid and attendance program was because if all those assets were transferred into her name, she was going to have to pay taxes on it. And what I just heard you say is, you know, there could be a way where they could continue to pay the taxes. The daughter wouldn't have that liability on her hands, at least not initially. And that's really useful.
Well, she may be under the misconception that when she receives funds from him, that is a income taxable event, which it is not. It is a gift. And receiving a gift, either outright or in trust, does not create tax liability. Now, those assets, if they generate interest and dividends in the future, those dividends and interest will be added to her income because of that trust or because she owns the assets outright. But she really shouldn't consider the gift itself as a problem for tax purposes.
Interesting. So, John, if you could, for our listeners, provide a piece of advice that as people are either they have loved ones that are starting to need care, or they themselves are starting to need care. What kind of advice would you give to our listeners?
The number one thing I would say is give some consideration about how you're going to be financing your long-term care. If long-term care policies are still an option for you, I think that's an excellent thing to explore. If they're not because of your age or health condition, visit a professional like me. There are things that maybe you can do to qualify for money to pay for this type of care that you weren't aware of.
So I think, you know, kind of an overarching theme there is to start planning now. You know,
right.
Don't leave it to the last minute when, you know, you've got to make knee-jerk reactions.
Right. There are planning vehicles which will help you so that you've done it in advance while you still have capacity, you're involved in the process, you're in control. You don't really want to leave that to family members after perhaps you've become incapacitated and can't really help be involved in the process.
Absolutely. That's good advice. John, for our listeners that might want to contact you, how might they do that?
A couple of ways. My phone number is 214-691-7781. You can email me at jmcnair@barnett.com. And feel free to visit my website, mcnairelderlawanswers.com.
mcnairelderlawanswers.com.
That's it.
Very good. Well, John, thank you again so much for being a part of our show this morning. We truly appreciate your time. And at this point, I'm going to hand it back to Sam in Atlanta.
Thank you, Brad, and thank you, John. That was very good, informative information. Thanks.
Thank you.
Joining me today in the studio is Helen Frederick. Helen is a licensed clinical social worker, as well as being the director of Plymouth Harbor. Good morning, Helen. How are you?
Fine. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Hopefully we can do this without me getting in trouble and misspeaking as I normally do. Why don't you begin by, as Brad suggested with John, tell us a little bit of your background. And I know you really want to make the show about Plymouth Harbor. That's great. But just build a little foundation for us to take off of.
I started out working in the state mental health system at the old Georgia Mental Health Institute. Got some excellent training there when it was a training facility. Worked in mental health centers for several years. Eventually got my master's in social work. I worked for hospice for about a year. I did some other things too.
Mm-hmm.
But everything I've done kind of led up to the job that I have now, which I've been in for about 8 years.
Well, let's take a step back. What put you into social work, though? That's a key question.
That's a good question. I guess I've just always wanted to be able to help people.
Okay. All right. And from the time you were in school, I mean, was that your career choice from the time you were in school?
No, it really wasn't. In college, I couldn't decide what I wanted to major in. Finally majored in English just so I could get out.
That's all right.
Because I could do well in English. I could write.
Uh-huh.
And then just kind of fell into the job at Georgia Mental Health.
Okay. All right. Let's move over to Plymouth Harbor. You're the director there, so I'm going to begin by asking you a very simple question. What is Plymouth Harbor?
Plymouth Harbor is a congregational respite program for seniors. It is in its 19th year. We'll celebrate 20 years next April. It is a program that is open 3 days a week for people who either can't stay home alone or don't want to stay home alone, that allows their caregivers to have a break. Therefore, it's called a respite program.
And tell us what it is that you do at Plymouth Harbor, and we'll begin there.
We provide activities for seniors. It's a place where they can come and talk to other people, make friends, have a great lunch. We have musical entertainment that they enjoy. It's just a day out for them so that they're not sitting at home watching television, getting depressed.
And the premise, though, is respite care, correct?
And socialization for the person who is brought to the program.
Let's speak and develop that idea. As you know, I'm in the home care business, and if there is a fallacy to what I do, it's that I see our clients and our loved ones, I got to be careful how I say this, becoming trapped in their own home. So tell us how you go about solving that issue.
Well, we get referrals from the Alzheimer's Association, mm-hmm. from physicians, from previous clients, and when they might see a caregiver who they think mm-hmm. really needs a break, but they are committed to keeping that person in their home as long as possible, they would refer them to us.
Are your clients, the bulk of your clients, reoccurring, or are they a one-shot time, or
they come regularly.
Uh-huh. And I would imagine because it is twice a week,
three times a week,
that there is a great deal of socialization and relationships and friendships that are made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. It's really a community.
What are some of the specific activities that you engage in?
We start out in the morning, and they arrive, and we serve coffee, tea, kind of a continental breakfast. We do morning news and announcements, celebrate birthdays and anniversaries. They move to another area of the room where we lead them in some stretching exercises, playing with a ball to get them to bend over, stretch their back. And then we do some word games, so it's exercise for body and brain, just to keep them stimulated.
And is this a two-hour program? What's the hours involved?
I'm sorry, the hours are 10 to 3.
And so typically, if I'm hearing correctly, the program is these individuals come sometime around 10 and they stay the entire, okay. And how are they transported? Do you provide that, or is that based upon the individual?
Most of them live at home with a spouse mm-hmm. or an adult child mm-hmm. who transports them. We do provide some limited transportation.
Mm-hmm. As I understand it, and as I know, when there is care being delivered in the home, many, many times the stress level on the caregiver is such that they are the ones that end up either needing medical care or whatnot. And as I understand your program, this is to help eliminate some of that.
Correct.
Tell us what this affords the caregivers to do and how it might benefit them.
They have a day free where they can go and take care of their doctor appointments, have lunch with a friend, go home and sleep, go grocery shopping by themselves, go to a support group. And we do offer a support group that meets twice a month
Tell us about the support group. Develop the idea. What is it? What does it function? How does it function?
It's a place where people can come and talk about their frustrations. They can get ideas from other people about how they might have dealt with a similar situation. If someone is wandering, for example, or doesn't want to take a bath, they can just get a lot of support.
Do you find that when a new person comes into your, into your center, what are some of the misconceptions maybe they have in their mind, or that stories they've been told that, you're able to kind of allay some fears, maybe point them in some helpful directions? Can you share some of that? Kind of look at it through the eyes of a new person coming in there for the first time. I'm sure it's overwhelming, first of all.
You mean a participant who comes, brought by a family member?
The
family member. Well, for most of them, it's a totally new concept. Their mother or their father might have lost their spouse and moved to Atlanta from another city. They know no one here except this daughter or son. So for some of them, they're very resistant to coming. But after they've been there two or three times, they just fit right in, and they love being there because we love them and take care of them, and we just have a good time. We laugh a lot.
Are the caregivers sometimes out of state? You know, like that they live somewhere else, and then their parent is in your center?
I don't think we've had that experience, but that does happen a lot.
Helen, you indicated that the hours are 10 to 3. That also takes you over the lunch hour. Mm-hmm. How do you meet the needs of the food dilemma?
Is food's part of the...
Food, well, lunch is the big part of the day.
Socialization, that's right.
That's what we all look forward to. Our lunches are now provided by Senior Connections.
Okay.
In Chamblee, Georgia. Mm-hmm. For about 13 years, we had a woman who cooked for us, but she got to be 81 or 82 mm-hmm. years old herself and just could not do the job anymore because of her health issues. But Senior Connections provides a delicious, healthy lunch that's planned by a dietitian with the needs of seniors in mind.
So it is focused upon as we were speaking earlier, those difficult nutritional needs of mm-hmm. seniors. Mm-hmm. And give us an idea, what would that lunch be?
Are you looking for a lunch?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I always am.
Getting hungry. It's close to noon. typically, it is chicken or fish with rice. Lots of fresh vegetables, fruit usually for dessert, or pudding or jello. And then, of course, we have the occasional birthday cake. So,
I'm sure that probably occasional means once a day.
A lot of birthdays. Yeah. Do you have those kind of festive times when you celebrate birthdays? Is that like you celebrate the birthdays for the month, or do you
no,
do something like that?
We acknowledge everyone's birthday. Occasionally, a family member will bring the cake when it's their person's birthday. Our oldest member is turned 99 years old, August 3rd.
Oh.
And we had a cake for him and balloons, and his wife came, and we just had a good time.
What's the oldest a person's ever been in the center?
He is the oldest.
That's the record?
Yes, we had a woman who I think was approaching 99, but her family moved out of state. So,
so we're looking for the first triple digit person.
Yes, and he might make it. I don't know.
Now, if not him, I'll be right on his shirt.
Okay.
Obviously, you've been in the corporate world. You've done other types of social work in hospice and whatnot. Yet you choose to work in this congregational daycare ministry, if that's the proper terminology.
It is a ministry of our church.
Why? What is it that draws you to this position?
Well, when I did my internship for my master's, I wanted to specialize in geriatrics. And I did my internship at Wesley Woods Hospital. Mm-hmm. So I learned an awful lot there, and I like working with older people. Mm-hmm. I like what they know, their experience, and I love being able to help the families who are caring for someone who has dementia or Parkinson's or has had a stroke.
Okay.
It's just a great way to contribute to the world.
At a high level, I kind of went down this road, and you were struggling with this issue. Can you tell us a story, a feel-good story, that might warm the hearts of our listeners?
Well, I've been thinking. There's so many people who have benefited from Plymouth Harbor, but currently we have an elderly couple who are both participants. Their son lives in Atlanta. Their daughter lives in Florida. And they began, he would bring her, and then he would go and work out at LA Fitness. Mm-hmm. He had a lifetime membership, and he was very proud of his physique. He can still wear his World War II uniform.
How old, or is he?
I think he's about 89 or 90.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he's getting his money's worth out of that lifetime fitness program.
Oh, he is. But I don't think he goes anymore because he had to quit driving. His son just felt like it was not safe, and his family has hired a caregiver. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a couple of them who work during the week, and they bring this couple to Plymouth mm-hmm. Harbor. Mm-hmm. The wife recently fell. She got up and started doing a little dance at Plymouth Harbor and unfortunately fell and broke her hip. So her dementia has advanced a little, but mm-hmm. she's still able to come. And if they were not coming to Plymouth Harbor, they would probably be in a nursing home mm-hmm. Or be at home in really bad straits.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great story. Now, I know you said that this is a ministry, but I'm sure that at some way there's got to be some type of financial support or cost associated.
People pay fees to come to Plymouth Harbor. Mm-hmm. The cost is $40 a day, mm-hmm. which averages out to be about $8 an hour.
Okay.
And we do have some scholarship assistance. People leave money to Plymouth Harbor in their will or ask that donations be made to Plymouth Harbor upon their death in lieu of flowers. So we have some scholarship assistance.
You know, I've been neglecting, I've mentioned a couple of times that it's a ministry and a congregational type of respite daycare. Who or what church is this associated with?
It's Central Congregational United Church of Christ.
And where's that located?
It's on Claremont Road near Briarcliff.
Okay.
Not far from the 85 Claremont Road exit.
Okay. Is the center one of those where as soon as the person starts going, they go, I wish I knew about this earlier?
Oh, yeah. Some people say that.
If you had a wish and you could get one message out there to the public on behalf of Plymouth Harbor, what would that message be?
Well, I think it would be that you can't do it alone. I think a lot of male caregivers especially want to take care of their wife and vice versa. And they want to keep people at home as long as they can. But it just like raising children, it takes a village.
Yeah.
And there is help out there.
Yeah. For our listeners, Helen, who might be in this situation where the caregiver is struggling or they see it coming, what piece of advice could you give them as they begin to think of alternative ways of addressing the situation?
For a caregiver who is just beginning this?
Oh, for a family. What is the piece of advice for a family as their loved ones start down this road of senior citizen?
Well, I think having a good physical assessment is primary to see what really is going on with this person. There are many things that cause dementia-like symptoms, and sometimes it's another medical problem. There is medication that can help tremendously. We are very fortunate to live in this world of so many modern medications. Mm-hmm. And to be in a support group. Like I said, you can't do this alone.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. That's great. If we have individuals that would like to reach out to you and contact you directly, or how would they to be enrolled at Plymouth Harbor, how can they do that?
Well, my phone number is 404-633-4506, extension 225. And we have a website, which is www.plymouth-harbor.org.
And one more time, give us the general geographical location of Plymouth Harbor.
Northeast DeKalb County.
Okay.
At Claremont and 85.
Helen, that's great. I think it's a great program. Thank you for being our guest. It was a great job.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Okay, that's it for today. And we want to thank our guest. We want to thank John in Texas as well as Helen here in Atlanta for being with us. We also want to thank our listeners for tuning in and remind them that if they wish to listen to a recording of today's broadcast, they can do so at eugeriaradio.com. And as always, in closing, if the youth of our nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that to seniors, are this nation's greatest national treasure. Thank you and God bless.
Ujiria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.